You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Whether you're hunting the back 40 or chasing game deep in the backcountry, the all-new Razor Guide Pack from Outdoor Edge has it all. Coming in at only 12 ounces and in a premium wax canvas roll pack for compact storage and travel, the Razor Guide Pack is 7 blades in total, including a 5-inch replaceable blade folding knife, a 3-inch replaceable blade caping knife, and the flip and zip saw for wood or bone. For more information, visit OutdoorEdge.com.
Whether you bond over streaming binge-worthy videos, watching sports recaps, video gaming, or by unplugging altogether, the 2026 Lincoln Nautilus Hybrid helps keep you connected throughout your journey. Learn more at Lincoln.com. Available connectivity features and functionality vary by model. Package pricing, trials, and term lengths vary by model. Video streaming and games are only available while parked.
This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics. Happy Monday, everybody. Want to apologize for getting this episode out a little late. This is a really good episode today. It's one of those episodes where there's perspective. I don't even really know how to put it, because I've never been in a situation like today's guest has been in. Today's guest is Ted Bright, and we're going to talk about a successful hunt. But it's a successful hunt that, man, like, almost didn't happen. And not because of him, but because of his son. Right. And so I'm going to just let the story tell itself. I don't want to, you know, give too much away here in the introduction, other than this is an episode that, you know, it's obviously a hunting podcast, but this is an episode where hunting is not important. The story is not important, or the success of killing the deer is not important. Family is important. And when you have a scenario like this unfold in your life, you realize how insignificant hunting actually is in the grand scheme of your life, right? There's a little saying I have written on my desk here, and it says family over everything. And that just means that when I get carried away with hunting or work, or I have these little moments where I think, you know, things are going wrong, I just have to take a step back and look at what is truly important. And that is obviously my mom, my brother, and everybody outside, you know, on the, what I would say, there's a circle here. I have my three kids and my wife and myself. That is in the circle, right? And then there's another circle outside of that, which is my brother, my parents, my stepbrothers, and the immediate family. And then like grandmas and things like that. But then everything outside of that, you know, I worry a little bit less about, because there's things that I can't control. And so this episode is just, I really felt like Ted's story here needed to be shared, because it's just really good. It's unfortunate that this all went down, but the good thing is that here we are, you know, thanking the good Lord that things turned out, you know, in the most positive way possible from out of the darkness that happened to his son, him and his family. So I'm just going to let the story tell itself. The shitty part is that I wish I recorded this podcast like 3 days later, because his son eventually got out and killed a deer. And so I wish that I had, I wish I would have held off on recording this so we could have, you know, talked about his, you know, his success. But regardless, it's a great episode. It's a great story. It's unfortunate that it happened, but it needed to be shared. So hopefully you guys enjoy. Before we get into today's episode, though, I want to send a, you know, talk about the partners here. Tethered, if you guys are interested in saddle hunting, I'm going to have a little bit more saddle hunting type content coming out on the Hunting Gear podcast. But Tethered, if you're looking for a saddle, if you're looking for a platform, climbing sticks, saddle hunting accessories, look no further than Tethered. The best part about Tethered, though, is that not only do they have the awesome products, but they have an education center basically built, or content built. So YouTube, you know, other guys like myself who use the product. There's guys out there who use it way more and more efficient than what I use it at this point. But what I'm getting at is definitely go check out their YouTube channel on how to educate yourself to be a better saddle hunter. So that's Tethered. Wasp Archery, man, just heavy metal. I don't know why I keep coming back to that, but if you're looking for a serious broadhead that does a shit ton of damage, and that, you know, like, let's be realistic. You put a broadhead, any broadhead, through the heart of a whitetail, that whitetail's going to die. But this year, with a marginal shot like what I had, I truly believe that the Wasp jackhammer was the reason why I found my deer, because the damage that it did to the liver, to the guts, came out the other side, right? And so I really do think on marginal shots, the broadhead really is, that's the test for a broadhead. Not the double lungs, not the heart shots, the bad shots, right? And so that's my fault. That's not the broadhead's fault. And so when you have a broadhead that can kind of make up for your mistakes, that's why I continue to go back to Wasp, because I honestly feel like they are just an amazing product. Majority of their heads are made in America. So with it being Christmas gift season here coming up, there's a discount code for you on Wasp broadheads. This is a perfect stocking stuffer, if you ask me. NFC20, and that's going to get you 20% off of a Wasp broadheads. And you can go check that out at wasparchery.com. Hunt Stand, again, just another company that wants to see you be successful. And so they have the app, right? And they there's all these all this awesome functionality behind the app. They have this new upgrade called the Pro Whitetail upgrade, which you can go, and it's designed for whitetail hunters, right? This pro whitetail upgrade. And so with all that said, you know, all the functionality, all the awesome ways to use it, the amount of information behind the product is what is really amazing. How to use it, all these different ideas from all these different people on how to use this to journal, to document, because really that's what this is, right? It allows you to look, it allows you to e-scout, it allows you to know who the property owners are, what the property boundaries are. You know, you can do all your food plot stuff in here. You can check the weather. You can, you know, save trail camera pictures and all that stuff. It is documentation, right? And it allows you to reference a single point on your phone. Oh man, what's the wind doing? What should I do here? What should I do this? And it just helps you. It actually is the best forecasting tool for your particular properties that you have access to hunt. So huntstand.com, go check it out. I'm sure they're going to be having some kind of Black Friday sale along with all the products that I talk about. And then last but not least, Vortex Optics. I mean, just superior optics, rifle scopes, spotting scopes, binoculars, rangefinders, red dots. You need it. These guys have it. And on top of it, the customer support on top of all that is really what makes Vortex superior, and their VIP warranty, right? So you smash it, you break it, or several years worth of just abuse, and it finally falls apart. Because I treat my products like shit, right? I'm really hard on all my gear. And so when, for example, my old pair of binoculars that I have from Vortex, the casing came off of it just from the dragging it in the dirt and all these Western hunts that I went on. We're talking about, you put it in a box, you send it to them, they fix it up for free, and then it's damn near like new when you get it back. So, it is new when you get it back. So that VIP warranty is something very special on top of all the knowledge base that their customer service team has. So it's a win-win-win. Tethered Wasp, Hunt Stand Vortex, please go out and support the companies that support this podcast. And then last but not least, do me a big favor. Go to iTunes or wherever you download your podcast and give me a 5-star review. I know there's a lot of guys out there who I get the DMs, right? I get the, hey man, I love your podcast. You know, thank you very much for sharing this information with us and sharing your perspective and getting all these guests on. A lot of times guys will say, hey, you know, thank you for doing this. It helped me, you know, this guy's story helped me, or your story helped me get closer to a buck. And then they send me their success pictures. Take that to iTunes or wherever you download your podcast, leave a 5-star review and let everybody else know how awesome the Sportsman's Empire is and the Nine Finger Chronicles and the Hunting Gear podcast are, man. That would really help me out a lot and I would really appreciate it. So there's that. And then Instagram, Facebook, make sure you follow, make sure you communicate. And it's just this giant community that we've created at the Sportsman's Empire. And, with it being Thanksgiving week, that in turn is what I'm truly thankful for. So huge shout out to all of you for following along and being part of this community that we've built. That means a lot. So enough talking. Let's get into today's episode with Ted Bright. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. I have a strong feeling you will. 3, 2, 1. All right. If you're on the podcast this time of year, usually that means it's a good thing. Something good has happened to you. And Mr. Ted Bright, you are on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast once again because of a really good thing that happened to you. Welcome back.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate you having me. It's been a while and look forward to doing it again.
Yeah, yeah. So this, you know, a lot of people talk about how a hunting season can be a roller coaster of emotions, right? And so everybody's like, oh man, I've had like 8 dead days. And then all of a sudden the rut broke out. And I saw 3 shooters or whatever. And then it went back down and then it went back up. And we talk about this roller coaster during the actual season. But it sounds like your life, not just about the hunting season, has also been a bit of a roller coaster in the past, month and a half, all the way until today.
Yeah, it was actually 4 weeks ago to the day that we received the call that no parent ever wants to receive. And that basically was that our son, TJ, who probably many of your listeners know or have seen posts about us hunting or yep. something along those lines. And he was found unresponsive in his dorm room at like 7:30 in the morning and was rushed to the hospital. And I don't know how much detail you want to get into, but I'll let you ask the questions that you want. But,
Yeah. So this is one of those times where we kind of like, especially this conversation, we put hunting to the side and we talk about real life for a moment. And I'm not trying to guess. I have the only call I've ever had is Mac fell off the play equipment. He bumped his head. That's the worst call that I've ever gotten about one of my children. And so when you get a phone call from someone and they say your child is not responding or is unresponsive, what's the first thing that kind of goes in? Like, what's the first thing that pops into your head?
Oh gosh. You don't even know. You don't know how to react, your immediate response is like to get there, to get to them.
Yeah.
But he goes to school 3 hours away and, what little broken information we got was that he was going to be heading to the local hospital. Then, just a few minutes later, we got another call saying that he was, you know, still unresponsive, but they were trying to get him to a point where they could stabilize him and get him to a larger hospital, like, you know, have put him on a helicopter, I think. And
yeah,
is what they had said. And that's ultimately what ended up happening. So he basically did not have a pulse or breathing on his own for like 40 to 45 minutes. We didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
We were just kind of, you know, flying by the seat of our pants and not knowing, you know, we just wanted to get in the truck and go, but we had to wait a little bit. We had to wait on my oldest daughter, you know, to get a few things and meet with her, so she could go up with us. And
yeah,
she was a little frantic and she got lost. Yeah. And, then we made it to Columbia in like record time.
Yeah.
And they had airlifted him to a larger hospital in Columbia, Missouri.
Gotcha.
And, you know, so they revived him at his local hospital, flew him to Columbia where, you know, it was not a good situation for the first 24 hours. When we got there right after he did in the helicopter, and for the first 24 hours, it was just basically one, you know, negative news after another. And it was just all his vitals were, you know, trending to a very dark place.
Yeah.
And it's, forgive me, it's still difficult to talk about.
Yeah.
But that first 24 hours was really, really tough. And
yeah.
And they put him, you know, they induced the coma, and he was still fighting it so hard, though. Even though he was unresponsive, you could tell he was fighting. There was at one point where we saw, my wife noticed it, that he crossed his legs because he was cold, because they were, you know, trying to bring down his body temperature. And we saw him cross his legs, and we thought that was a great sign.
Yeah.
But then they administered this paralyzing agent, and they brought his body temperature down to 90 degrees.
Dang.
For about 36 hours. And, you know, it's crazy, you know, holding and touching and, you know, rubbing the hands of your son, which feel lifeless and cold, you know, it feels like a corpse. And, you know, it's just limp, and it's just an indescribable experience.
Yeah.
But after the first 24 hours, we got the first bit of good news. And then it was just literally one, you know, it's like Goggins says, right? One foot in front of the other. And it was just one small victory, one piece of good news at a time. And we just kept building and building and building.
Yeah.
And then finally, when they turned off the sedation medication and the paralyzing agent, and they had his body temperature up to about 98 degrees. Just minutes after turning off the medication, we could see he was trying to blink his eyes. And then within 30 minutes, he was opening his eyes and squeezing our hands. And many of your listeners may have been able to follow along on my Facebook and Instagram stories, where I was just posting this out there in a really raw fashion for people to follow, because it was almost like it became a mood, you know. It went from me having an efficient way to update our friends and family to, it felt like it became this movement where there were so many people inspiring and uplifting us to continue to fight.
Yeah.
And and you were one of them, you know. All the messages and everything that we received during that time, it was helpful, you know. It really was.
Yeah.
You know, he just progressed each minute, each hour, each day, to the point where we walked out of the hospital 8 days after it happened. And it was interesting because the first 6 days we were there, the entire staff was trying to prepare us for staying there for weeks, if not months.
Yeah.
And, you know, they came up with what they thought was a diagnosis, and turns out that may not actually be, but, you know, so we still have a long road of trying to figure out what the root cause was.
Yeah.
But, you know, TJ has just progressed immensely. He's, you know, still in physical therapy and some speech therapy for his voice just from the breathing tubes. But I mean, for all intents and purposes, your average person that didn't know TJ would not even know anything happened to him right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a parent, and maybe I don't know if you've done this yet, but you've has the ultimate sigh of relief happened yet?
I wouldn't say it ever really even happened. I guess you could say it was, you know, the ultimate sigh was just the fact that he was waking up from his coma, because you just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then even after that, you know, it's just like, it was just barely away. All he can do is open his eyes and squeeze your hand, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not like you're really breathing a sigh of relief over that. Although, you know, that was probably the biggest or the closest to that.
Yeah.
But then at each step of the way, you know, especially within the first few hours, it's, you don't know if that's the plateau or, you know, is he going to be functional for the rest of his life or, you know, so what degree? And I mean, he just continues to show what the human spirit is all about. And,
absolutely.
You know, what toughness is and, you know, just a will to fight and survive. And
So let me ask you this. Your son is an athlete. Okay. And so that means good physical fitness. You hear doctors, every once in a while share stories about someone who like was in a major car accident and they're in really good shape. And you know, the terms, oh, he's never going to walk again, or he's never going to do this. Do you feel that him and his state of health is actually one of the reasons why he's been able to recover the way he's recovered?
Definitely. But I would also say that, you know, just the intestinal fortitude and the mental strength that I think is
just a
maybe even
kid.
More important, you know, I mean, yeah. And I feel compelled to tell as many people this, especially parents of younger kids, that, you know, in today's world of soft standards and low expectations and everybody gets a trophy and, you know, you can't offend anybody and all this and that. You know, I've always been an advocate of tough love and, you know, holding kids to high standards and expectations. And I don't think soft survives that. I really don't. Right. I saw the what he went through just to battle to stay alive at, you know, life at its very fundamental core.
Yeah.
And I don't think soft survives that.
No, it's amazing. Like, the story and just like I, there's no real words that I can come up with other than this, like, and other than the word energy. Right. And so what I mean by that is just the energy that he had and like you had and all the energy that was being sent your guys' way. Right. And I think in my world, in my beliefs, I think that had something to do with it too. You know what I mean? And so we got a tough kid and we got good parents and we got positive energy and the outcome, like how can the outcome of that be negative? You know what I mean? It just can't. So it's just all good vibes, man.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I'm sitting here crying, talking about it, but there was nothing negative about it. It really, there really wasn't. There was no time for negativity.
Exactly.
And I look back on it as an amazing experience. I mean, of course you don't want to go through that if you don't have to. Right.
Right.
But at the same time, I've never felt so much love. I've never felt so loved. Mm-hmm. And just to your point, it was an overwhelming and overwhelmingly positive experience, you know, just to feel all the love, really.
Yeah. Dude, I'm so glad that you and him are where you're at right now. You know what I mean? And so the reason I wanted to talk about that portion of what happened recently is because I think a lot of us, whether it is a guy who loves golf or like guys like us who we're head over heels in love with bow hunting and whitetail hunting and want to go through all the motions of that. It's an event like this that, and I would love to hear your thoughts on it. It's an event like this that makes things that we thought we love insignificant.
Absolutely. I've never been so singularly focused on something in my life.
Yeah.
I can, 100% say that, for that first 3 or 4 days, I didn't even think about hunting at all. And there's not very many things in life that, that would do that to guys like us in late October.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just reality. Right. But, I didn't have to think about work. My company was very supportive of me and said, whatever you need. And I didn't leave that ICU except for to go to the bathroom. I slept on that uncomfortable couch for 7 nights and was just, right there with him the entire time. And my whole family was, outside of, of course we had to do other things outside of that, but my wife did an amazing job of letting me really focus on managing the doctors and the specialists and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
While she made sure that everything else in life that needed to be tended to was.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was, like I said, I've never been so singularly focused on something in my life.
Right. Right. Now, with that said, he's out of the hospital. All right. It is the hunting season. Did he get to participate now that it is, that he's out of the hospital? I'm sure he has certain restrictions. He's still in physical therapy, but was he able to get out at all after this event and just sit in the woods?
Yes. So we got out of the hospital late Tuesday night, and our first time out was that next Thursday. So 2 days after he got out of the hospital and 9 days removed from dying for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
We went for a short walk and just went here behind the house with the crossbow. And he actually ended up almost shooting a buck. It was just a little bit too dark.
Yeah.
But, we saw two different bucks and a doe, I think. And I mean, he stood up and was turned around and had the crossbow on the buck at like 30 yards. It was just a little too dark though,
Yeah.
But, so that was the first time out. And then, his girlfriend was in town. So he did a lot of, first of all, he just needed to do a lot of chilling out and that type, just recovering.
Yeah.
And, of course he had broken ribs and all that stuff from living on CPR.
Yeah.
But, so he, did a lot of chilling out and everything. And then last weekend. So I don't know, a couple of weeks after he got out, we went out and, climbed trees right next to each other. And, we got in our saddles and everything and, did the whole thing.
Yeah.
Saw a couple of deer, but nothing great that morning. And then yesterday, actually, he went out with a rifle behind the house here by himself.
For
a few hours. So on the right track.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a good kid right there. You know what I mean? Like hunter. Just hunting and wanting to go out and hunt. Because I remember, and I'm in no way comparing what happened to me to comparing what happened to your son. In no way am I comparing these two things, except for the fact that hunting got me out. Like I had my finger cut off on November 3rd or something like that. November 3rd or something like that. And I was back in a tree 2 days after I had my finger cut off. And I would argue that that had more of a healing power for me than any type of physical therapy I did there after that.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with the, you know, the just being in nature, especially by yourself, you know, I mean, it's great that, you know, he went with me a couple times, but I don't know, for a young man to be out in nature and finding his way by himself is a powerful thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How old were you?
I was 25 when that happened.
And was that like a profound experience for you, you know, being out there by yourself after that event?
Yeah. I mean, I tell you what, I did a lot of thinking about how, and it, this, these thoughts at the time were big, but now I look back and they're just like, okay, you only lost a finger, right? You just lost one finger. And meanwhile, there's other people. I've talked to a lot of vets on this show who have lost arms or entire legs. And that is much more of a, you know, just being able to move around and compensate for the loss of a leg or an entire arm. And here I am at the time, you know, I was 25 going, oh my God, this is such a huge impact on my life. And really the only thing I can't do anymore is use chopsticks. So, you know, and so everything else in my life is normal. But, you know, at the time, there was really a short period of time that particular year where I was just like, life's going to change, you know, like I just thinking about things instead of being stuck in a house or being stuck in a room with just a TV. And basically I just was able to think about the path that laid in front of me. And I'm going back to my original comment, I think that is what helped the most, is just the isolation, the nature, and me thinking.
I could see that.
So things are all headed in the right direction, right? Right now. And that's a good thing. So your son, he's able to get out. He's back at home. You know, the rehab is still in progress. But the other side of this is, I'm sure as a father, you wanted to be within ultra protective dad mode all the time. And you just I don't know, maybe I'm wrong here, but you wanted to be close to him and close to him and close to him. And just wanted to be by him all the time so that if, you know, God forbid something happened again, you were there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. To a degree, yes, but I feel like that's probably, I don't know, that's detrimental probably to his recovery and development. Yeah. So I didn't do that a whole lot, really.
Good.
I can remember, you know, my wife, we were talking about whether or not he could drive somewhere. And we had just, you know, in all the chaos and everything at the hospital, I guess we had forgot what the doctor's orders were, or they weren't clear about it, potentially, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
But we were actually starting to let him do some driving, you know, just kind of locally by himself, you know, or even with others. But then when we went to the pediatric cardiologist, she said absolutely no driving for 6 months. So we had to reverse course on that. But I remember when he asked to drive somewhere the first time, my wife was just like, oh, I don't, you know, just kind of like what you're saying. I don't know about that, right? Driving, but it's dark and there's deer out there and it's dangerous, you know? And
yeah.
I'm like, and I said, and TJ's right there, you know, I'm like, babe, he's not dead anymore. And, you know, I mean, you might as well, you know, kind of be light about it and joke about it now, because it's already done. And he liked it. He laughed. And so we haven't been too bad about that. No.
Yeah. Yeah. So what this means, though, is now we're slowly getting back to reality. And the reality is that it's hunting season here now. Right. And so was it easy for you to leave the house and get back into a tree and start hunting again?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been easy for me, but, you know, maybe not easy. I don't know. It still took, you know, several days or whatever to do it. But, you know, just the whole family, everything was out of whack. You know, I mean, even our dog, when we came home from the hospital, and again, we're gone for 8 days, she was acting all goofy, and you know, she just needed time, you know, she needed time. So, you know, there for a couple of days, you know, all we did was kind of like repair ourselves, you know,
and,
you know, spent time with the dog, you know, just time with each other. And, you know, it just, you kind of had to have that reset because of, you know, you always wonder what PTSD is like, and you hear a lot of people, you know, going through that. But I mean, I could see why people struggle with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of identified it, and I'm like, you know, I'm not going to go down that path, but, you know, it's been a little bit more challenging for my wife, I think. And at any rate, you know, there was a lot of, recovering that we all needed to do.
Yeah.
And hunting was just not high on the priority list. Now, unless, you know, like taking TJ hunting, you know what I mean? Or something like that. But we did go for lots of walks and, you know, just, of course, we had lots of visitors.
This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
Too. So, you know, it's, you know, time management's a big part of it. You know, everybody wants to come by and see the miracle child. And
Yeah. So though, you're on here 'cause you killed a big buck. And so the craziness happened. The craziness is not as crazy anymore. And so that gave you an opportunity now to get your life back in order in one way, shape or form. And now you were able to get out and start hunting. When were you actually able to get out and start getting into the woods and hunting this year?
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365Copilot.
Geez, I guess it would have been, it's tough to say because it's been kind of a blur the last 4 weeks, but I would guess it would be right around Halloween. I mean, I didn't hunt Halloween, but, I think maybe the night before that was my first time out, and there, you know, the first couple times it was just, you know, down and dirty, quick, you know, were usually right behind the house, you know, wherever I could just get to and hunt for an hour in the morning or the evening. And then, you know, that as things got a little bit easier and more time available, then the Saturday before rifle season, so in Missouri, so that would have been what, November the 6th ish, something like that.
Okay.
Was the first time that I got out on public land and I did an all day hunt, you know, and it was awesome.
Yeah. So let's talk about this season. All right. You have a piece of property And, you know, we were talking about this in the intro, and it's a common term, high pressured public. All right. And when I asked you to describe that to me, I could hear it in your voice that you weren't joking about the high pressured portion. Talk to us a little bit about this property and maybe what makes it so high pressured.
The 15 to 20 vehicles in the lot.
There it is.
It gets a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you have that many people in the parking lot, it takes the people who usually walk out of there successful are thinking outside of the box. All right. So what kind of, you know, knowing that this was a high pressured piece of public, talk to me a little bit about how maybe you thought outside of the box, or maybe you didn't think outside of the box, but talk to us a little bit about how you were going to approach this high pressured piece.
It's pretty simple and straightforward. You know, that Saturday before rifle season, when I got the hunt all day, I just, you know, went in super early and, you know, picked a spot with some, you know, historical information for the, you know, set up in the dark and everything, and hunted a couple hours in the morning. And I saw, you know, had some decent activity and everything, but then my real plan wasn't, you know, I wasn't expecting success there. I was really looking forward to, you know, scouting throughout the late morning and midday, and then getting set up in the evening. And, you know, that's what I did. And the key is not only scouting for deer, of course, but scouting for where other hunters are not. And I was able to do that and, you know, got set up in a favorable spot and had a encounter with a really good buck. I thought he was a 10 pointer, but turns out he was 11. But I actually got him on video. He was in range for like 12 minutes and came in as close as 22 yards, and he was getting a drink of water, and he was quartering to me and with his head down, and I was at full draw for like 2 minutes and 6 seconds. I timed it on the video afterwards, you know, and I was at full draw at 22 yards, and I just did not like that shot. I'm not afraid to, you know, to take some quartering two shots and, you know, try to, you know, line up the, you know, the heart lung area as far as even, you know, kind of shooting at a downward angle into them. But that shot, that quartering two at that angle, I just felt like his scapula was protecting the boiler house, and, you know, it was just too high of a risk of deflection on a big deer like that. And I did not take the shot, and I did not get a shot. And I kind of called it to a couple of my buddies and said that I feel comfortable with my decision to not shoot that deer. And I said, you know, I have a feeling I'll run into him again on Saturday.
And so this was the first day back into the timber for that all day sit, right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's my first like real hunt, you know what
okay.
I mean?
Okay. Gotcha. So you almost got lucky and just nailed it right out of the gate. Talk to us a little bit about the terrain here. Why did this deer like the area that you were in, and maybe what the deer movement was doing in relationship to where all the other pressure was at?
Well, it was, you know, pre-rut. It was early November, but it just, I wasn't seeing any, you know, like breeding sign yet. I'm sure it was happening, but, you know, it was more like a pre-rut pattern.
Right.
And, you know, deer activity was just like you would expect during that time. You know, bucks were up early and, scent checking. And those are, you know, up a little bit earlier also, just because it's, it's getting chilly and things like that. And, so I was able to find that place where the other hunters were not, and the deer activity was really high.
Yeah. And so what about the terrain? Are we talking like a big block timber? Are we talking about river bottom? Are we talking about like egg mix? What was the breakdown there?
Mostly river bottom area.
Okay. All right. And so river bottom can be awesome. Like I'll tell you a little bit about my experience on river bottom. River bottom ground can be some of my favorite, in certain times of year on certain wind directions, and that wind just, or your scent goes over the river, and then whatever thermals are just carrying with the water or the create some kind of drift with the scent, and you can find some really Loctite stand locations next to water. At the same time, I feel that in other times when thermals start to shift, you can get some what I call breathing, where if there's not a strong predominant wind, you can get almost like the tides in an ocean where the scent can come in and then it can go out, and it's almost like a teeter totter or a pendulum. And in that, and it could really screw you up at the same time. So, was this location like a fail safe location, maybe where the river would bend into a terrain feature, or was this like flat ground?
Yeah, it's the latter. It's tough, and the wind is wonky, and it's going all over the place. You know, you don't get a consistent prevailing wind, and you don't get a consistent thermal push or pull. It's one of those trickier ones for sure.
Yeah, and one thing again that I've noticed over the years is that's where the deer love to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Milkweed is your friend.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you had this deer within range for a long period of time. You decided to pass on the shot. That hunt ended, and were you able to get out the next day?
No, I wasn't able to get out for several days. Actually, just you know, with at this point, you know, I'm like trying to catch up with work and everything. You know how it goes. Yeah. I mean, just, and we're still, you know, taking TJ to therapy, and we had a couple of follow-up appointments, and one of them was with the pediatric cardiologist where the whole family went, and that was that week, and that was like 3 hours of doctor meetings, and it was not till the following Saturday that I was able to get out.
Okay. So,
which was the opener for firearms in the
opening period. For firearms. Okay. So opening for firearm season, was this property still heavily pressured for that for that rifle opener?
Yeah, there were several trucks there, but I think it was probably a little bit limited because of how cold it was. It was cold and windy. I mean, it was cold.
Yeah. And, well, that's a good thing, right? I mean,
yeah,
the temperature weeds out the strong or the weak, and the strong get out in the woods. And so knowing when you're getting out to this property again, or this piece of public, talk to me a little bit about how the impact of that last encounter in that location weighed on your decision making on where to set up the next time.
So that encounter, you know, I in watching that deer's demeanor, I felt like he was very comfortable with his travel route, coming from where he was coming and going to where he was going. So especially with a couple of days, or, you know, several days of me not being in there and presumably nobody else being in there, I was comfortable with the fact that he may have, altered his route for a couple of days after I was in there, if he happened to catch my ground scent or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
He never caught on to me while I was there, but I suspect, you know, he probably caught my ground scent the next day or something like that, but... So I feel like he probably altered it for a day or two, and then, but considering it was several days later, I felt comfortable with the fact that he was going to be on the same travel route that he was at the prior, encounter. And, the conditions were different, totally different. You know, we went from having like a south-southwest wind to northwest wind. And so I set up in a on a completely different angle for that. And sure enough, he came in on the same route. So it worked out pretty good.
Wow. And were you in the exact same tree as last time?
No, totally different tree. So,
okay.
I was on like a different side of his preferred trail.
Okay.
So I had to get on the downwind side, and I was cutting it, you know, I kind of wanted to give him some of that wind. So, I was cutting it pretty close.
Yeah. So talk to me about your access route into this location. Was it a straight line? Did you have to J hook, anything like that?
It was probably 2.5 to 3 mile bike ride. And then, it's rough. Really rough, like not an easy bike route, multiple times of getting off and lifting over logs, and it's about as difficult as you want to navigate in the dark on a bike.
Yeah.
And then I had a 3/4 mile walk, and I walked in a straight line, and I used some kind of like some ditches to my advantage, and able to get in with my entry route directly in line with the prevailing wind. And I knew that day with a strong, you know, usually if the wind's out of the northwest, it's going to be pretty strong, right? It's not like these light and variable southwest winds, right? So with the northwest wind, it was pretty strong. So I just walked directly into it, minimized my, my scent cone in searching for a tree in the dark and everything. You know, I had an idea of where I wanted to be, and then I found it, and I, you know, with minimal walking around and everything. And it ended up that the buck on his trail coming in, he probably missed my entry route by maybe 20 yards or so.
Okay.
So, you know, it was cutting pretty close on that, in that regard also.
Yeah. Hey man, I'll tell you what, that's how I shot my buck this year. I mean, if he was 20 yards to the east, he would have been right in line with my scent. And so the terrain led him to go kind of down, or not necessarily downwind of me, but like a quartering wind, and was right in front of me. And my wind was just like, oh God, I got busted by a doe backdooring me while I was in that stand. But let me ask you this. This is more of a, like, not necessarily reflecting that this hunt, you know, but talk to me a little bit about, I think a lot of guys struggle with knowing how to work a quartering wind, right? To the deer is coming to you while your wind is, in retrospect, blowing right at them, right? And there's a lot of these very close calls that could potentially happen in there. How long did it take you to really figure that out from a learning curve standpoint?
With milkweed, not long. Before milkweed, you're pissing in the wind, basically.
Yeah.
But you know, then when you learn, you know, how to use milkweed to learn all this stuff, then it becomes pretty simple. Especially in conditions like that, where, you know, there's a strong prevailing wind, and you know, what did I got probably like 22 feet up. When you get 22 feet up, that prevailing wind is even stronger and more consistent than it is at ground level, just because there's less obstacles.
Yeah.
But, you know, I definitely think there's value in what you said there, in that, you know, a buck that is going into the wind is going to be more comfortable, right? I mean,
right.
If you can thread that needle and give him the wind, he's going to be more comfortable, and you're going to get more like natural movement and patterns. And you know, I like that versus, you know, a deer that's on edge and wary and
And at any time, I mean, that milkweed floats down a little bit too far, or you know what I mean? And the game is then over at that point. When you're floating your milkweed and it starts to be funky, how long do you sit there before you say to yourself, man, I think it's time to make a move to a different tree?
Yeah, I mean, that's just situational. Tough to really say, but like on Saturday, you know, I think two times where out of the, you know, what, 30 times that I would drop milkweed or whatever that morning, two times where it went over like towards the area where he was coming from. And I, you know, like I said, I kind of thought he was going to come from that area. And it was so crazy because when it got over there towards the trail he would come on, and then all of a sudden it would just shoot straight up.
Yeah.
Like straight up to where I wouldn't even be able to see it. It's just kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. Then? Yep. In a way. So was it, and that was coming straight up. Was that the actual wind that was hitting land and causing it to go straight up? Or do you think that was that like a sunny day thermal situation?
It wasn't sunny, so your guess is as good as mine. I have no clue what caused it to do that because it didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and it doesn't need to, right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Like it, what the deer, like the buck came in and you know, you had a shot at it. How long were you in the tree before that deer showed up?
So I guess I was in the tree about 6-ish, and I shot him around 8:30.
Okay. All right. From the time that you actually saw him to the time that you let the arrow go, was it quick or was it delayed like last time?
Seconds.
Was he on a pretty good clip?
I saw him at 50 yards and he was coming in quick. He was, you know, coming in with that confidence that he, just like he did, you know, the previous time.
Yeah.
But the previous time, there were a couple other deer in the area that kind of, you know, just, you know, kind of stole his attention. Right.
Right.
I think if those other deer wouldn't have been in the area that, the first time I saw him, I probably would have gotten a clean shot at him, but they kind of, you know, distracted him, whatever. He kind of bumped him around a little bit. But on Saturday when I killed him, you know, he came in true. There were no other distractions. And yeah, so I saw him at like 50 yards coming in on the same trail, and I kind of anticipated that how I would have to do this and ended up being correct, but you know, I didn't want to like commit to this before I even saw him, so I was, you know, still wanted to judge it, but I kind of thought what would happen is he would come in and I would have to let him pass by. And I did. I didn't know it was going to be that close because he passed by at 14 yards.
Yeah.
And all the while, I'm just kind of hiding behind the tree, and I've got good cover. You know what I mean? And at the, I'm also, you know, I turned on my GoPro, and I, you know, grabbed my bow, and I'm getting, you know, everything ready. And as soon as he went by at 14 yards, and he went behind a couple of trees, I pivoted around in my saddle around the strong side of the tree. Because let me back up a little bit. He came in for, like, an angle at my like 4 o'clock, and then at my 3 o'clock he passed by at 14 yards.
Yeah.
And then when he went behind those trees, I pivoted around my tree and came to full draw in one motion, and then I stopped him with a real soft, just real soft. So. Because he did not look up at me. He just looked, right? And I had good wind cover that I could do this. And at 27 yards, he stopped. He was slightly quartering away. You know, I'm at full draw. I came to my click and just buried it right, you know, just behind the crease, which, you know, with the angle he was quartering to, ended up being, you know, perfect shot. I shot through both lungs right above the heart.
Nice. After you hit him, so that was your initial reaction, just like dead deer?
Yes, because I knew the shot felt good and it sounded good, but you know how it goes on a, when you execute a perfectly, you know, a perfectly executed shot, you really don't see it, right?
I mean, right.
Usually when you see your arrow, it's because you're peeking out your string. And that's not necessarily a good thing because you're torquing your bow to do that.
Yeah.
But and so I did not actually see it hit, but everything felt great about it. And I watched him. He bolted a little bit, and then he jogged, and then he walked, and he stopped, and he was just flicking his tail incessantly, and he walked a little bit more. And then I thought I saw him lay down, but it was just so thick, I couldn't tell for sure.
Right.
And so he just kind of disappeared, you know?
Yeah.
So I just took my time, you know, I think I even ate a little bit and, you know, texted my buddies and told everybody that I, you know, shot a good one. And, then I climbed down and I checked out my arrow, and, I was a little bit, I guess you could say, puzzled on the arrow itself. The blood, it was just so dry already. And this is, you know, it was only like an hour later or whatever, but it was completely dry. And it just didn't have that bright red look to it. In fact, on the fletchings, it looked like, you know, what could have been like gut matter, you know, like solid particles. But I took my finger and spit on it and wiped them down, and there was nothing there when I wiped it. So I knew that that was just air bubbles that had, you know, dried and frozen in there. So I knew that was good. And then, you know, I just ended up tracking them about 80 yards, and I just took my time real slow, 'cause I thought I saw him lay down, but I wasn't 100% sure on that because it was so thick.
Yeah.
So I just kind of took my time, and it was probably 2 hours after the shot where I finally saw him, and he was like 15 yards in front of me. But it's so thick, you know, it's just tough to see him.
Yeah. Well, so I love this question. It's one of my favorite questions to ask. You walk up to the deer. You grab the horns and you pick his head up for the first time. What was going through your mind at that point?
Just all of the emotions of the previous month, you know, literally. Yeah. It was kind of overwhelming, you know.
Yeah.
It was almost to the point where it wasn't a typical like celebration, you know what I mean? It was a heavy moment, which was, you know, very fitting for, you know, everything that had gone down in the previous month for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine. I'm like, the older I get, the more emotional I get about everything. Like, I'll be honest. I think I was watching some commercial where, a dad and his daughter were doing something, and the way it was edited and the way, you know, I don't even know what the commercial was for, but you know, the narration voice was talking about how like a father's love to his daughter is very important, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, you know, like I started getting teary eyed and things like that. And so, that's awesome, man. And so you have this real roller coaster of emotion, and when you were able to get that deer out of there, you know, three miles in, that means you got to go 2.5 miles, 3 miles out. Was the pack out difficult at all, or do you have this method down?
Every sip of Coca-Cola brings you closer to the excitement of the FIFA World Cup 26. Because nothing compares to the joy. So grab a Coke and drink in the FIFA World Cup 26. No purchase necessary. 13 plus in 50 U.S. states and D.C. with a web-enabled device. Ends March 1st with 8 entry periods. Rules at CokeURL.com/soccer rules.
Oh, it was challenging. Holy shit. Because I couldn't go the direct route that I went in there just because it's too rough. I mean, at some point you're just going through the woods, you know?
Right.
So I had to go like all the way around. So probably ended up being closer to like 3.5 miles
right.
to go the different route, which is an easier trail. But then I also had to, you know, take my cart off my bike and walk the cart in and locate the deer without my phone, because I lost my phone on the way back to get him. Oh yeah. And then, so it took me a little while, But I had to load him up and you know, carry him, you know, by hand through the timber for, gosh, at least a half mile.
Yeah.
And then I had to take him on the bike through like a very broken trail for, you know, what, another half mile ish. And then I had, you know, relatively smooth sailing after that. But
yeah.
Then of course I, you know, was trying to, it's getting dark at this point and, or no, it was dark. It was just dark by the time I got back to the truck. But as I'm approaching the home stretch, I clip a log and my cart flips over and my wheel falls off.
Oh shit.
Yeah. It was, you know, just one of these things, right? Lots of adversity and challenges along the way, but I got to tell you, my perspective on what is adversity and what is a challenge has changed a little bit. And
absolutely.
The bar is pretty dang high right now.
Exactly. So here you are, in previous years, you'd be bitching about certain things. And now you're just like, this is pretty freaking easy.
Yes.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
So when you ended up getting that buck home, what did TJ say about that?
He was stoked.
Yeah.
I wish he would have been with me. And that's, you know, well, I guess last year was the first year that we haven't spent the first day of firearm season together in a long time because he was, you know, he had football. But, you know, this year he actually went, his girlfriend had a fundraiser event for him at her college in Bloomington, Illinois. And so he went to that. And so he was not with me. It would have been awesome if he was, but. You know, he was stoked when he got home and we recounted the whole story and everything. And
awesome.
Yeah.
It's, awesome. Well, just, I don't know, like this is a positive laugh, right? I mean, it's a laugh where you're just like, holy shit, life is crazy at times. Sometimes it's crazy in a bad way. Sometimes it's crazy in a good way. But, dude, I'm just so happy that your son is on the path to of recovery, and I'm happy for you and him. And I'm also happy that, you know, you got these hunts in and got the job done in this small period of time. You know, you were able to punch a tag this year.
Yeah, it definitely was a lot more meaningful.
Yeah.
You know, just considering all the circumstances and the reduced time in the woods. And, you know, I mean, anytime I can wrap my firearms tag around an archery kill is a good day, you know, and, just, you know, with all that stuff going on, it's been a wild ride.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't know what the rest of your season looks like, but good luck the rest of the season. Congratulations on this high-pressured public land buck that you ended up tagging. And, man, good vibes, man.
Yeah, I actually almost wrapped up getting the video done, so hopefully I'll be able to drop that here tonight.
What's your YouTube channel so people can watch it?
Hunt Fit Ted.
Hunt Fit Ted. All right. All right, man. Congratulations again.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Huge shout out to Ted. Huge shout out to his son. Good vibes, man. That's all about good vibes. And so send those good vibes out into the world, right? And that's, man, this sounds hippie as shit, but I really do think that the support, the good vibes, the energy, the positive energy is what brought, you know, and the will to just be a tough son of a bitch, right, is what saved his son. That's my opinion. And the fact that he was in good shape saved his son. And now here he is out there killing deer already, right? So congrats to TJ, congrats to Ted. And man, keep grinding, keep living life. And we'll talk to you guys next time. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.